Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Larkin, Judge Ross, Judge Bjorkman, the Honorable Michelle A. Larkin presiding.
Good morning. Please be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals, the 7th day of February, 2024. We have four cases on our calendar this morning. The first is State of Minnesota, Cloud Appellant versus Schnell Commissioner of Corrections Respondent. Ready for oral argument. Would each counsel be sure to state their name for the record before each leg of your argument so we have a record of who's speaking on our recording? You may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Gina Schultz. I'm an assistant appellate public defender, and I represent Nicole Cloud, the appellant in this matter. Your honors, the parties have proposed two different definitions for the word repeatedly in the CIP statute. The commissioner contends that it means simply more than once, and Cloud argues that it means at least three times. One of those definitions, Cloud's, appears in dictionaries, comports with common usage, and makes sense of the entire statute. The other definition can only be found in appellate opinions interpreting other statutes. Now, if this court finds the analysis in those opinions persuasive, then I've lost. But to do so, this court has to conclude that there is a good reason to disregard the dictionary definitions in this case. And there just isn't one. Here, the dictionary definition, it makes sense of the entire statute. This isn't Collins. There's no reason in the text of the statute to say, sure, the dictionary says this, but it doesn't make sense here because we need more notice in a criminal statute, or because a defendant should be on notice that you can't send a second threatening letter.
But those are collateral consequences to interpreting the word one way or the other. They don't bear on, those collateral consequences don't bear on the underlying question, which is, what does the word mean? And if I'm right about that, why aren't we bound by those cases, even if we think we found 1,000 dictionaries that support your view of the term?
You're absolutely not bound by those cases, Your Honor. In Collins, you specifically said, this is about Minnesota statutes 609.749, subdivision 2, parent 6. You said that. And
right, but
this
the word
is not about that statute.
But the word repeatedly has a singular meaning. There's nothing in that case or in the treatment of any other cases that would suggest to me that the definition was based upon the context, but it was based simply upon grammar.
I disagree, Your Honor. I think when you look at Collins, Collins said there is a circuit split here. There's a federal circuit split. There are other state cases going the other way. The dictionary says over and over again and again. But when we look at the context of this statute, we need more notice for a criminal statute. And this court specifically said, we're talking about sending a second threatening letter. A defendant should be on notice that they can't send a second threatening letter. And so in that case, we're dealing with criminal conduct.
But what isn't the same rationale applicable? Because here we're dealing with punishment, right? And wouldn't, for the same reasons our court in Collins said, you know, we need to give notice, right? That so the defendant understands that more than once is going to be a problem. I mean, doesn't that same rationale apply here? To advise people who are part of this permissive program that they risk going back to prison if they do this more than once?
I certainly agree that notice is an issue here because participants need to know what kind of what kinds of consequences their actions might have. But they are on notice that any violation could remove them from the program. That's what the CIP contracts does. But the statute isn't really about what kinds of conduct our clients can get away with. It's about when the department has discretion, whether to use its correctional experience and expertise to decide whether a particular person should be able to remain in the program or if the legislature has taken that discretion away from them and said, on a second violation, we don't even want to let you think about it. We remove them. And so I think this is, and in Collins, we're dealing with, again, a threatening letter. Here we are dealing with, for the most part, morally neutral, non-criminal conduct. It's bad. It's a violation of the rules of CIP. But in this program, people can be violated by for stopping for ice cream on the way home from work, for forgetting about a meeting with their agent, for forgetting to call in their daily schedule.
And if those types of rule violations justify pulling a person out of the program, why would we think that a second chemical use wouldn't?
It certainly could. We've never taken the position that the department couldn't remove Cloud from the program.
Let me phrase it this way. If the program is that strict and intolerable, why wouldn't we think the legislature intended repeatedly to mean just more than once?
Because the legislature didn't say that. They said repeatedly, and if you are a normal person entering this program and you want to know what it means, you'd go to the dictionary and you'd look it up and see it says.
How many of your clients have gone to the dictionary? Let's get past dictionary, because it seems like we can find a dictionary definition to say anything. So does that make this word ambiguous? If so, what does legislative history or intent tell us about what the legislature intended to happen here?
Yeah, absolutely, Your Honor. And I do want to take issue with the fact that we can find a dictionary definition to say anything, because we can't find one that says more than once. But
The fourth edition of the American Heritage Dictionary, in fact, had more than once as the lead definition of repeatedly.
I did not find that, Your Honor. The definition, or the version that we have at the most current one.
I know, and I guess the point of my question is, I mean, these definitions change over time, and so I share Judge Larkin's concern about just saying, well, the dictionary defines it, when there are different definitions and they change over time.
I think that's right, Your Honor, but when we look at this court's case law, at the Minnesota Supreme Court's case law, it has been extremely dependent on dictionary definitions. That they are sometimes the beginning and end of the inquiry. And that's because what you're trying to do is figure out what the plain and ordinary meaning of a word is. And here, if the only place you can find this definition is an outdated dictionary and appellate opinions interpreting other statutes, that's not the plain and ordinary definition of the word. And that's fine if it's a technical definition. But it's not. This is not what this statute is. There is no reason to think that the legislature meant some kind of technical definition that a participant couldn't find. Where would a participant find the definition that the commissioner has proposed? They would have to log into Westlaw. They would have to read a statute or a case interpreting a totally different statute, and cases from other jurisdictions interpreting totally different statutes. There is no reason to think that the legislature wanted to override the common and approved meaning of the word when it wrote this statute. But at any rate,
is a single use of a controlled substance a material violation if somebody is in the program for a first-degree controlled substance sale?
It is not, Your Honor. The materiality of a violation is a factual determination that the hearing officer makes. And in fact, Commissioner Schnell has issued a memo with guidance saying when we're looking at substance use violations, we analyze them under the public risk provision. And that's in the record here. That's in the appendix to respondents' return in district court. And certainly that makes sense, because if we were looking at, if substance use was a material violation on its own, then we wouldn't have a separate subdivision saying that it's mandatory removal if it causes a risk to public safety. But materiality, what the commissioner's memo says is that when you're trying to determine whether a violation is material, you look at a number of factors. You look at similarity to the crime of offense, or the crime of conviction, certainly, and that's what Your Honor is getting at. But we also look at other mitigating circumstances and whether it looked like a lapse of judgment or something that really deserves the most severe consequence that you can impose here, which is removal from CIP. Because I really do want to emphasize that under the CIP statute, the commissioner is instructed to impose severe and meaningful consequences for any violation of CIP. And under the commissioner's definition, the only time they have discretion to do that is for a first non-material violation that doesn't implicate public safety. And so that narrows not only that provision almost to non-existence, but also the parens 4, which talks about whether a participant's use of controlled substances presents a risk to public safety. Now, again, the only under the commissioner's interpretation, the only time that would have an independent use is when someone presents a risk to public safety by using a controlled substance one time. And that's not impossible. We're not saying it's impossible. But it is a very narrow and unusual circumstance if what the legislature intended is for a second use violation to make removal mandatory, to say that the department in this circumstance doesn't even get to think about whether, for
example, what do you point us to as support for your argument that the legislature did not intend that result?
Because they use the word repeatedly. And the repeatedly, when you look up the dictionary definition, it says over and over again and again. And so I think that's a pretty good indication. And I think that it's completely consistent with common usage. And again, when we look at the structure of the statute, which I, Your Honor brought up ambiguity, and I haven't addressed that yet, but, you know, textual canons, we can use pre-ambiguity, but whether we use them pre or post, it's the same result. If we look at the whole statute, we assume that the legislature intended it to intended every provision to have an independent meaning and to have full effect. And here, the commissioner's definition, I think, collapses the statute. And it says, we have to assume that the legislature said a lot of words when what it meant was, if you violate twice, you're done. And they said a lot of words to address only this very narrow situation of a non-material violation that is not a risk to public safety.
I'm still hung up on why it's non-material to use methamphetamine when you've been sent to prison for first-degree controlled substance sale and given an opportunity to serve your sentence in the community.
Yeah, well, the answer is the hearing officer found that it wasn't. Presumably based on...
I understand that. I guess I'm very confused by the statute because it talks about material violations, suggesting that one would do it, and then these other rule violations, which are non-material. And has anyone ever, in the courts, thought through what material means versus non-material? I mean, perhaps the hearing officer was wrong.
I think the hearing officer should be given another opportunity to think about that. But I assume the hearing officer relied on the commissioner's memo, which said, when you're considering whether a violation is material, you look at mitigating circumstances.
If we're relying on the commissioner's opinion on that point, why aren't we relying on the commissioner's opinion regarding what the word repeatedly means in terms of an administrative policy making role within the management of the Department of Corrections?
Yeah, I apologize, Your Honor. I think I should have been more clear. I'm not saying this court should defer to the commissioner's memo. All I'm saying is that materiality is one of those concepts, like repeatedly, where the department has discretion to figure out where it is, when the facts warrant it. And here, the hearing officer said this is not material because he took her mitigating circumstances into account. And, you know, that finding hasn't been challenged. The commissioner didn't challenge it. I think it's correct because when you look at Ms. Cloud, her agent thought that she should be able to remain in the program. He worked with her while she was in jail to find culturally appropriate treatment. He said, like, look, when you look at the context of this use, her 17-year-old nephew had died. And could you go one way or the other determining whether that was material? Sure, but the hearing officer said that it wasn't. He said that she was not a risk to public safety. And so here, we're not really talking about materiality. We're only talking about whether it was repeated, whether she repeatedly violated the rules of the program. And because she only violated them twice, she didn't. Again, the department, if we send this back to the hearing officer, he could certainly make the same decision on a different basis. He could say, listen, you've been convicted of first-degree controlled substance. You've got two substance-related uses. This is a strict program. You can't stay here. But that's not what happened this time. The hearing officer said, I don't have discretion because the word repeatedly means more than once, and you violated more than once.
And your argument is that repeatedly means three times or more.
Yes, Your Honor. Yep.
Why is that more reasonable if we agree with you that the dictionary suggests the plain meaning is over and over and over? I mean, why not four or more times? Why not five or more times?
Well, that's what, I think there's a definitional minimum of three. When you look at again and again or over and over, the first again contemplates a prior use. You can't do something again if you haven't done it a prior time. And so that's where we're getting this definitional minimum of three. But certainly, that's part of our argument, is that there are other dimensions to this word. It's not just a numerical application. That's not how people use it. They want to know, if you ask somebody if an action had been done repeatedly, they would want to know, you know, in what kind of time frame? How serious was it? And so I think there is more to the definition than just a number, but it is a minimum of three if you look at the plain language. I see that we're running out of time. I certainly can answer more questions. Otherwise, we're asking this court to reverse the district court's order denying Cloud's petition for writ of habeas corpus.
All right. Thank you. And obviously, you'll have your time on rebuttal if we have any additional questions or you have any other thoughts for us. Who is appearing on behalf of the commissioner?
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Bradley Simon. I'm an assistant attorney general, for the state of Minnesota, and I'm appearing today on behalf of the Commissioner of Corrections. This court should affirm the district court because the commissioner properly removed appellant from the Challenge Incarceration Program, also known as CIP, after she admitted to using methamphetamine two different times, thereby repeatedly failing to follow the rules of the program. At the outset, I'd just like to address a few things right away that came up in appellant's initial argument. One is that appellant argued that under the department's interpretation of the statute, the only time the department would have discretion to impose sanctions would be in the limited time where there's one non-material violation. And that's not true. The department retains discretion under the statute to determine what type of violations, depending on the circumstances of the violation, constitute a material violation and require removal after just one violation. And so there is still some discretion. There's also discretion on the part of the commissioner to determine whether a violation presents a risk to the public, the safety of the public. So there still is discretion built in to make those determinations under the department's interpretation. Another thing I wanted to address, Judge Larkin, you asked, why wasn't using methamphetamine one time a material violation? And I think the short answer is it could be. It depends on the circumstances. It's in the commissioner or the hearing officer's discretion to determine whether a violation rises to the level of being material.
Material to what?
The commissioner interprets material to mean more severe, more significant type of violation. I don't believe that the definition of material has been litigated, so...
I mean, it seems like material would imply relatedness as opposed to severe.
I think
that seems that, piggybacking on what Judge Larkin was asking, it seems to me that if an individual is in the program because of sale of drugs, the use of drugs would seem to be material to the circumstances that brought her into the program.
I think that would be a fair reading, Your Honor. So I go back to the answer that she could have been removed in the hearing officer's discretion after the first time. She wasn't, so, you know, that...
So just so we're clear, you're in agreement that the only way removal is appropriate is if the state's view of interpretation of relatedness or repeatedly was accurately applied.
Yes.
Materiality is off the table.
That's correct, Your Honor. That was the decision of the hearing officer, and that we believe that issue is firmly before the court.
So your brief goes into significant detail, thoroughly going over the case law in this jurisdiction and others with regard to the term repeatedly, but not much grammatical discussion. Let's talk grammar. If you were to say, I repeated the act, is that the same as I repeatedly did the act? As
yes.
A matter of grammar.
I think it can be, yes.
Can be or is?
I think it can be.
So if I said, on Monday I ate oatmeal for breakfast and this morning I repeated that act, And you said, oh, I eat oatmeal repeatedly for breakfast. We're saying the same thing, in your view?
Perhaps not in that situation, Your Honor. I think it depends. It's context dependent. And that is exactly our argument here, is that...
Well, is it context dependent? I mean, in a LY has different meaning in different usages, but in this case, I think it means in like manner, repeatedly. I walk slowly. You walked in a slow, like manner. Doesn't repeatedly mean in a manner that is repetitive?
I would agree with that, Your Honor.
So how can doing something twice be in a manner that's repetitive?
Well, I would say because the second time is repeating, and so it's repetitive. But the department's argument here is that if the court looks at the word repeatedly in complete isolation without the surrounding context, then perhaps appellant's argument has some merit, that there could be a reasonable interpretation there. But courts do not look at statutory language or interpret statutory language in isolation, but rather with giving consideration to the context of the surrounding statute.
Often what we do is we begin with a dictionary definition. I was looking for your brief to list all the dictionaries that support the state's view, and I didn't see a long list.
Yes, Your Honor, that's true. We didn't cite a dictionary definition. But when those two things, context, and certainly it's appropriate for the court to start with dictionary definitions, but when those two things, context, statutory context, and dictionary definition, seem to conflict, context controls. And we know that because of the legislature tells us that in Minnesota Statute 645.08, where the legislature says that statutes are to be interpreted by their plain meaning, unless doing so would conflict with the legislative intent or be repugnant to the context of the statute. And we believe that the intent of the legislature is clear, given the context of the statute, that this program is intended to be an intensive, strict, rigid, with what many may say are harsh consequences. That was clearly the intent of the legislature. And so when read in context, it's the department's belief that it is interpreting that repeatedly phrase correctly.
So for us to look beyond the word itself and what the word means and look at what the statute is intending to do, the spirit of the statute, we would first need to determine that the term is ambiguous, correct?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think courts look to context of the statute pre-ambiguity determination, because courts can look at the surrounding statutory context to see if, when read in context, is the phrase ambiguous or not. Is it susceptible?
There's a difference between looking at a word in context and concluding that this must have been what the legislature meant. And what I think you're asking us to do, which is to look at the spirit of what the legislature meant, which is a different thing. It's what I think the legislature urges us not to do unless the term is ambiguous.
Not necessarily, Your Honor. I think that if we were asking the court to go outside of the language of the statute itself to determine the spirit or intent behind the statute when it was enacted, then I think, yes, it would need to be post-ambiguity. But we're not asking the court to do that, to look any further than the language of the statute 244171 itself.
So you're saying...
I'm just looking at paren 1. Commits a material violation of or repeatedly fails to follow the rules of the program. In reading that line, is it fair for me to think that whatever repeatedly means, it's referring to non-material violations of rules of the program?
I think that's fair, because if it was a material violation, the individual would be removed.
Here's what I'm wondering. Wouldn't it make a lot more sense to just read this as, okay, commits a material violation of the program? You've got a first-degree controlled substance sale and meth. That's a material violation. And then repeatedly is referring to didn't check in on time, blue curfew, stop for ice cream on the way home. And you need a lot of those because they're not material to justify your exclusion. Wouldn't that be a reasonable way to read this line?
I don't believe so when taking into account, again, the context, the way the legislature described. This is intended to be harsh consequences. I think it's important to remember that people who are in the CIP program are people who have been convicted of a crime and sentenced to prison. And this program is a very limited exception to that default that the person is serving their sentence in prison. It provides an extraordinary benefit to participants that they are able to
So you're arguing that the legislature didn't intend to treat material violations differently than non-material violations?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. To go back to your question, I do believe that when it says repeatedly, it's referring to non-material violations. Okay. I just disagree that it means a lot of them. Repeatedly, we believe, just as this court held in Collins, considering a very essentially the same argument that appellant is making here, the court in Collins, this court, stated that under a plain meaning analysis, finding no ambiguity in the word repeatedly, based on the word's derivation from the word repeat, that any reasonable person reading that statute will understand that they cannot send a second threatening letter in that case. Here, we believe the same analysis applies, that a participant in CIP would understand that if they've had
except for the fact that there, I think it's clear in the first example and end of the case that that was material. If we're distinguishing between material and immaterial, your argument makes sense as to material. That, well, of course, this is strict. This is a strict program, and the adherents have to be strictly applied. Okay, as to material violations, that makes sense. One, and you're done. But if it's immaterial, why is it within the spirit of the legislation to punish someone for twice committing an immaterial offense?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, the first number one goal that the legislature expressly provided for the program is punishment. That was the first goal that the legislature laid out for this program, punishment and accountability for offenders. Because, again, the default is that participants are in prison, serving their prison sentence. Again, this is an extraordinary benefit that they're getting, and so it's not surprising that the legislature intended there to be very strict and harsh consequences. And the repeatedly phrase, the way the commissioner interprets that, the legislature intended that to mean that if you repeatedly violate rules, doesn't matter what the rule is or how severe, how material, you need to be removed from the program.
It just seems to me it could have been a much shorter provision to say one material violation and you're out, two immaterial violations and you're out, period, done.
And the legislature has recently shown us that they know how to write things just that way. 609.14, having to do with revocation of a stayed sentence, was recently amended. And, you know, the legislature said if you've got a violation, policies favoring probation are not outweighed by the need for incarceration, even if the person has one prior violation, and then lists certain circumstances. So, I mean, the legislature knows how to talk about a second violation, a first violation, and they haven't done that here. And I just think with the juxtaposition against material violation, it makes sense that non-material violations require a bit more than two, especially given the usual usage of the word.
Well, again, Your Honor, the department is interpreting the phrase strictly as it believes that the legislature intended it to be interpreted.
What do you say about the question of superfluous evaluation then? I mean, if all you need is a single material violation and you're out, or two any kind of immaterial violations and you're out. It would be a very short statute as it regards the decision to remove someone. And the legislature didn't use that language. The legislature said a lot more about the discretion involved in removal. Why would it be? If your interpretation is correct, how does that make sense?
Well, Your Honor, I think that there is some overlap in some of the mandatory removal provisions. So, for example, a violation that if someone commits a new crime, That's a mandatory removal. But that could also be a material violation. So there is some potential overlap in some of those provisions. But each provision has an important role to play. So one material violation, one serious violation, you need to be removed. More than one violation of any type of the rules, you need to be removed. If you commit a crime, you need to be removed. And if you present a risk to public safety, the commissioner must remove that person. And so in the department's reading, each of those provisions plays a role and provides a specific situation where someone would need to be removed from the program.
Just so I understand, so if there's a, if it would be a violation to be 5 minutes late to report to the supervising agent, and just so I understand your interpretation correctly, you know, that's a violation. If you then are 5 minutes late in a phone call or a meeting the second time, there is no discretion. Mandatory removal from the program. That's the way you would have us interpret this.
Judge Larkin, I see my time is up. May I answer? Your Honor, yes, that's how the department technically reads that. I think there is some discretion there, though, in terms of the agent.
But the agent can violate the law?
No, Your Honor. But I think practically, if the agent files a, determines that the person has violated a rule, they file a report, and either there's a restructure or a hearing to determine if they violated a rule. And under the department's reading, and we believe that that is what the legislature intended, because the program is very strict. So yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
In conclusion, the department respectfully requests that the court affirm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gina Schultz again, representing Ms. Cloud. Your Honors, I just want to briefly pick up on this idea of the strictness of the program and the idea of letting the spirit of the law kind of override the plain language of the statute. That's not allowed, first of all. That's obviously been our position. But I also want to point out that there are other statutory goals baked right into the CIP statute. It's not just to punish offenders and hold them accountable. It's also to treat people with substance use disorders and prepare participants for reintegration into society. And if we're going to look at the goals of the statute, there's more than just one. And I don't think any of them are dispositive. I don't think they lead to a clear answer because I think the language of the statute does that. But I think it's also important to think about how the commissioner wants people to complete this program, people who struggle with substance abuse, who are emerging from time in prison. And so I don't see any reason here that the strictness of the statute would override the plain language. And as I think I mentioned in my first argument, that the statute is about strictness, absolutely, but it's really about when the department has discretion. Participants are on notice that one violation could remove them from program. Doesn't have to be material. It could be a minor violation, and the hearing officer could say, I've been told I need to impose meaningful and severe consequences, and here that's warranted. What the statute is about is removing some of those situations from the expertise, from the correctional experience of the department, and saying that these cases are so severe, we're not even going to let you think about it. And in the context of that statute, in the pre-ambiguity canons, I think Clouds is the only one that really gives effect to every provision here. And that's the main point I wanted to make, but I certainly would like to answer your Honor's questions if you have any.
I don't see any. So we thank you for your argument and the briefing. The matter is submitted. You'll have our decision within 90 days.
Thank you, Your Honor.